My name's Kevin Carroll. I'm the executive director of Tech San Diego. Boy, have I been looking forward to this one. And let me tell you why. So we're all kind of struggling as to figure out what's going to happen with the economy. Everyone has a different story. And one of the things that I've been trying to figure out for Tech San Diego on forecasting is, like, what is it going to look like next year? What is it going to look like 18 months out? Everyone has a different story, but no one actually gives their prediction. I was talking to Andy Ewald. Andy, say hello. Andy's the executive director here at Cushman Wakefield. Andy was sharing with me, we were going to jump on a podcast and share some data. And I got a sneak peek at the data. I don't know, Andy, if I was supposed to see all that before this, but I did look at those slides. And I'll tell you, I was really blown away by some of the numbers. And what I was really blown away by, you guys actually put a flag down and say, here's what Cushman and Wakefield think is going to happen. And I haven't seen that. And I know you have a world-class a research and economist, and I am really looking forward to it. The other face on the screen is James Boniker, who is the senior economist is your title, James?
Yeah, you got it.
And James is teleporting in from back east somewhere.
Here in not so sunny Boston, but yeah.
So here's what we're going to do. So I'm going to fade to the background a little bit because I always like to ask questions. I am going to turn it over to James and Andy, and they're going to go through some of the same numbers that I saw. And I think you're going to be surprised at a couple of things. And, you know, I usually don't date stamp a lot of these webinars and the podcast, but I am going to date this one. This is going to be the only one I'm going to date. It's April 27th, 2023. These live in perpetuity. So you guys are on the hook now for this. We're going to come back and we're going to look at this, and we don't even have to come back. It'll be right in the internet. And so we'll take a look at that. So with that said, James, Andy, I'm going to go on mute for a little bit. Again, I may pop in, but I'm going to let you guys go through some of the same data that you shared with me.
Yeah.
And great. I didn't even introduce who you were with. So before, someone should say something about who you're with, not just a senior economist and an executive director. I apologize for that.
No problem. And again, Kevin, thank you very much for the introduction. And, you know, Cushman Wakefield, which is a global real estate company, is very appreciative and excited to be involved with Tech San Diego. It really is an interesting part of our ecosystem and backbone here in San Diego. By way of introduction, Andy Ewald, I sit here in San Diego. I work with a very large team that is solely focused on representing, tech and life science business owners to really help them flush out all the fundamentals and decisions that go into a, you know, strategic real estate conversation. And as part of that, you know, we really have this very robust platform of Cushman Wakefield that is global in nature, but we get the benefit of teams and people like James, who sits out of our Boston office, to really help support, you know, aggregating data so that we can, you know, have our clients, support our clients making more informed decisions. So James is part of Cushman Wakefield's global think tank. I think there's 10 or so, James, involved with that, which is really, you know, involved on a daily, quarterly basis with updating, you know, fundamentals, macro fundamentals that have an impact at the local level. So we thought today we would start with an up-to-date macroeconomic overview that really takes into consideration some very specific details, you know, happening, you know, certainly in America that trickles down to the local economy. And then in parallel to that, I will chime in and share some fundamentals that are specific to the San Diego tech ecosystem, what some of our clients are faced with, what the next 12 to 24 months looks like here, with hopes that the listeners are, you know, armed with more information to help drive that decision. So, James, we welcome you, certainly appreciate your time. Why don't we just jump into it, James? I mean, my first question for you, and maybe we kind of go through the slides, is where are we? What's happening? I mean, we're flooded with information in the news daily, and everybody's got a different perspectives. I love the fact that our think tank really, you know, uses that data to come to, you know, of course, not a finite solution, but at least a good directive that I think is different than others. So I'll let you start talking, and then I'll pull in nuggets that are specific to our market. But we appreciate your time, and thanks for sharing what your team knows.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Thank you both so much for having me. Happy to join you. There's actually about 20 of us on this team now, Andy. And, okay. You know, so it's economists, data scientists, researchers. There's even a futurist and someone who focuses on sustainability. So, yeah, we really just try to be out in the forefront thinking about these broader trends and, you know, importantly, how that's going to impact commercial real estate industry and in this case, the tech sector. So, yeah, happy to join. So I'm going to walk through some of the slides here. I'm not going to go through all of them because we'd be here for 6 hours or so if I did. But
And James, just real quick. So for the listeners, we're happy to socialize this deck, Kevin. So when we're done, we can certainly get this, you know, comprehensive deck to you for James. We're not going to go through everything, but we'll certainly make this available to the listeners and be available if there's questions that come up based on, you know, the presentation and the follow through. So thank you, James. James, you're muted. Sorry.
Don't know how that happened.
Here there we go.
So starting out very high level, I think when thinking about what we expect to happen over the next year or two in the U.S. economy, you really have to take a step back and think about how the pandemic really affected the economy and trends such as job growth, where, you know, if you remember back to the early days of the COVID pandemic, people, or at least economists, were debating about what the recovery would look like, right? Would it be a V-shaped recovery where we get this very strong bounce back? Would it take years and years to sort of recover like we saw following the global financial crisis, right? And so I think that now that the dust has kind of settled, you know, we're a few years on, the recovery in retrospect looks very, very strong. So U.S. economy as a whole in 2022 added about 4.9 million jobs. That was on top of about 6.2 million in 2021. So a very strong, very full recovery in terms of overall job growth we've seen across all sectors for the most part in the U.S. economy. And so, but things are shifting now, right? We saw this very, very strong recovery, which has been accompanied by very strong inflation, right? That's really the key to what's going on in the economy today, is that the demand for things like hiring and goods and services has just been so strong, so robust. And we've had these supply chain issues too, right? With difficulty getting materials and labor. And those two factors together have really led to a very strong inflationary environment, the strongest rates of price increases that we've seen since the 80s, right? So it's a little bit uncharted territory in terms of recent history. And so that's what you're seeing with the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, right? And trying to kind of get things back in line. And so essentially our outlook here for the next year to 18 months is that job growth is going to slow. And eventually, you know, unfortunately, we are likely to see some layoffs across not just the tech sector, which have gotten a lot of the headlines recently, right? But this interest rate environment, this slower economic growth is going to translate into some job loss, most likely. So we're starting to see it in the tech sector, a little bit in the finance sector. But on the whole, job growth for the moment remains positive, but we do expect that to turn in the latter half of 2023. And then once we move out to 2024, we do expect us to be back in recovery mode and strong growth mode. So that's the headline there. And we're going to dive in a little bit to some of the details driving this.
Yeah, I think specifically in San Diego, just to keep tying this macro micro back, you know, we certainly have started to see some of those layoffs here in San Diego. There's been a handful of life science companies that have laid off people. Some defense related groups like General Atomics have laid off people, Thermo Fisher, et cetera. Some tech related groups like Too Simple, et cetera, have laid off. But really, when we look at it on a San Diego basis, it's still a very small percentage of what our total tech ecosystem is. So I think we want to look deeper into the data of, yes, layoffs after a couple of years of massive job growth, but still fairly stable with small percentages as it relates to an aggregation of total tech and other talent.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing more broadly, not just in San Diego, but the anecdotes, right? Those are the ones that get all the attention in the media and, of course, are impactful. But for every company that's laying off, there's two or three others that are still hiring fairly aggressively. So, just to put it in perspective from a longer term trend, 2022 is the second strongest year for job growth since 94, second only to 2021. But I want to focus on the right-hand side of this slide here, which shows industry by industry breakout in terms of the types of jobs that have been added. And so I think this is really interesting. If you look at the top here, we've got office-using jobs. So people in accounting, professional services, the tech sector, that's really led the way throughout this recovery over the past few years. And then similarly with industrial type jobs. So that includes like your manufacturing, high tech, some life sciences would be in there. And then of course, warehouse and trucking, all of the things supporting the logistics industry, which has just been booming with the rates of e-commerce growth that we've seen. And then if you look at, the bottom part of this chart, the issues where hiring hasn't fully recovered, it's primarily been in the leisure and hospitality sector. So that would be like your restaurant workers, your hotel workers, people in those service providing industries where people across that industry are just having such a tough time finding people to work, right? And so it's still in recovery mode there. But I think one of the issues is the job market overall has been so strong that you've had all these people who perhaps were working retail or in a restaurant, and now the job opportunities have been so plentiful, they can kind of move up the wage spectrum, right? And perhaps get those healthcare benefits that you typically don't see for part-time work in the service sector. So still some difficulty hiring for some of those types of jobs.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, to that point, this imbalance in the labor market and just the robust demand there's been for hiring workers, we've seen that rates of wage growth have really ballooned out in the past few years. And so I think on the surface, right, this is a good thing. You want to see people earning more so they can go out and spend money in the economy. But really what this ultimately is driving is higher prices for goods and services too, right? Because if you think about from an employer's perspective, they're having to pay these higher wages out to their employees. And so what do they do in turn? They raise the price of whatever it is that they're selling. And so this is kind of a concerning situation from, health of the economy, because if this accumulates over years and years and years, what you get into is this kind of doom cycle, right? Where wages increase and then prices go up. And it's just a really difficult time if you're a business operator, right? Thinking about if you don't know how much your cost of labor and your cost of materials and inputs is going to be from year to year, that's a very difficult situation to plan your business around, right? And then on the other side of it, it's very impactful for consumers. All of us going out and driving by the gas pump and seeing those numbers we're not used to seeing. Same thing with grocery prices and all along down the line. And so that's really why you know, you're seeing the Federal Reserve primarily and other policymakers trying to address this, because you can get into a situation where the economy just isn't stable and there's so much uncertainty that it it is very impactful across the spectrum. So that's really what's going on with inflation and interest rates now.
And then, James, I mean, I think we're again jumping around, but could we make the argument based on that previous slide where we're now seeing those layoffs, right, that that helps with that correction of stabilizing, you know, wages a little bit, which has certainly a downstream impact on cost of services and goods? Like, we probably need that correction a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's, you know, I would call it green shoots on this. So you can see for a couple of these types of positions for overall wage rates, we are starting to see them come down a little bit, but still very elevated compared to what we're used to seeing historically. And that's the same case for inflation. So, you know, it seems that the price of gas, that's started to come down. The prices for goods primarily tied to supply chains. You guys know out on the West Coast, we're there's not as many headlines about the number of ships sitting out off the port, which was kind of the dominating thing in 2021, right? And so some of these factors are improving, but not. I don't think the case is closed yet as far as where we'd like to be on inflation.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and then so, you know, I did kind of want to pivot a little bit and talk specifically about the tech sector. So this is some really, really cool data we get from the job posting site Indeed, Indeed.com, which is largest aggregator of job postings in the U.S. And so this shows for a couple of sectors, the number of jobs, unique jobs that are posted on that website, which, you know, software development, tech type jobs, those things, as I mentioned, were really driving this recovery. And so we should think of this as kind of a leading indicator for that labor demand in those sectors. And you have started to see, primarily in the software development, those high-paying, you know, coding jobs and things, that the number of job postings, the hiring demand, has started to slow quite significantly. There's still a ton of jobs available. As we mentioned, there's plenty of employers who are hiring still. But this should be a leading indicator, right? So less job availability, employees aren't going to really be able to see those types of income wage gains that they have over the past couple years. And so, you know, I would take this as a positive as far as the economy heading in the right direction. Higher interest rates, again, are primarily behind this, just because the cost of capital to make big investments in tech platforms has really dried up the ability to do so. And so I think that this is really the beginning of a trend that we're going to see for the next, at least through the end of this year.
Yeah, I think in San Diego, it's interesting, right? We try to look at, especially the tech sector, almost like micro-focused, right? Software, hardware. I mean, now the big thing that we're certainly seeing in the San Diego market is a lot of this artificial intelligence, you know, machine learning. And if you look at sector by sector, I mean, we've almost had like a double, you know, a 40% increase in students graduating from those programs and the timing of them coming into the workforce for specific tech-related jobs, you know, is interesting, right? So you can't, I think we just can't look at everything as one size fits all, because there are some companies, there are some tech sectors, certainly in our market, that are gaining market share, increasing labor, still very robust in that recruitment process, which, you know, I think kind of stabilizes this larger conversation.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I saw an interesting article and stat the other day where it was showing, you know, the number of graduates from Ivy League schools and MBA programs and things like that, what type of industry they're going into. And so for the longest time, really most of the last decade, right, it's been primarily these tech sectors, your Metas, your Amazons, really hiring those very high-skilled, high-quality workers. And now it's pivoting back to things like finance and healthcare and these other sectors that, you know, are really gaining the ability to attract these workers as the tech sector starts to falter.
Well, so, I think it's also, you know, on your previous slide, it showed the software development jobs, that there was a slowing, but it's still vastly higher than the post-pandemic high, right? And so, yep. you know, it's slowing, but it's not collapsing, right? And so, yep. I think that's just an important thing to get. We still have a lot of, small, mid-sized companies that are looking for software development jobs. Especially here in San Diego.
Yeah, great point. Great point. This chart just kind of highlights the scale of what we're seeing as far as global tech layoff announcements. So certainly starting last fall, toward the end of 2022, we started to see these announcements start to roll out. And it's primarily from these big, massive tech firms, right, that just hired so many people over 2020 and 2021. So to your point, Kevin, that's exactly what we're starting to see is a little bit of normalization where these companies, I think, got a little bit oversized as far as what they need for their core business, right? And so it's just a marginal kind of scaling back is how I would characterize it, to more sustainable growth rates, right? Because if you just look at the amount of hiring that was done over the past few years, it was, unsustainable, especially in an economy where we do expect things to slow down here in the next year or two.
Yeah, I also think too, you had business, this remote COVID really, I think, opened up a lot of business owners where they could grab labor anywhere in the world, right? The mind frame was a little bit different. And so, you might see that grabbing on to labor. I tend to think that business owners are going to consolidate a little bit back into kind of their main hubs, encourage people to be back into the office, really foster that collaboration. I think it is important for those in San Diego to realize that we certainly had a very unique benefit that came from COVID that wasn't here before. I mean, we certainly have had a good tech ecosystem, but, we really didn't have the big household names that had put a stake in the ground and committed to San Diego. And we do have that now. I mean, the names just mentioned, Apple is committed massively to, a ton of jobs and real estate over just the last 2 to 3 years. Amazon's gaming division has a very robust operation here now. Meta has entered the market, never here before. Google, has certainly expanded their operations here. So some of those underlying fundamentals, even with the layoffs, I think are interesting for San Diego. Now you can look at it both sides, right? If you're a tech company, you now have to be more mindful that you are competing for, really good labor coming out of the colleges here with some new big competitors. But the fact that they've, committed to our market here does really support the tech ecosystem here that we've all been, I think, very well aware of for some time.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you think about the tech sector, these companies tend to kind of form these communities, right, in places like San Diego, where, as you mentioned, Andy, there's a lot of cool things going on there. So I think that established presence is going to be something that'll keep San Diego, relatively, it's always it's a good thing during good times, and it can be a downside during down times. But I think just having that presence there is going to bode well for the area, regardless of what happens at the macro level.
Yeah, agree.
I've always made the argument for San Diego that we're typically first out of recessions, and we have past data to validate that. And part of that is because of diversification of the economy, right? When telecom has been down, defense has been up, and life science, and it seems like we always have a key kind of anchor industry that's kind of held things together in San Diego. But I think the point of the very large tech companies, yes, Apple and Google and Meta have planted flags in the region, but there's no huge, we don't have a Salesforce tower that has, 3,000 employees that gets whacked in a couple of days that really affects the local economy. Because we're a small, mid-sized company, I think while we're not fully insulated, I think we may be a little insulated to some of those larger layoffs. Again, we're not totally immune to what's going on in the economy, but it seems like the small and mid-sized companies, struggle to get that talent. And once they get that talent, they're really reluctant to let it go. So I think that will show up a little bit if you had some San Diego specific data as well.
Yeah, and I think as well, too, when thinking about it, I mean, we had this migration to our market. We love San Diego. We know what we have here. We know that we've got unique elements of weather and ecosystem and coastline and limited, you know, very fair commute patterns. But our cost of living has also been typically 30% cheaper than LA and Bay Area, as an example. And so I think that helps to keep the talent here, even if there are, you know, layoffs coming forward. They're here in San Diego. They want to be here. It's still cheaper than some other major tech markets. So I tend to think that those layoffs help, you know, come like almost like refertilize other businesses to help them grow and kind of spread that talent, you know, throughout the market.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And then, you know, just I think one final point, just sort of on what we're seeing in the labor market in terms of some of the tech and life science occupations. So you can see that for, you know, computer and math occupations, which is going to be a lot of your software engineers and things like that, you can see a very small uptick toward the end of this graph here, which goes, I believe, through March of this year in terms of the unemployment claims. So I think that this is interesting. You would have expected this to be higher, right, with how many layoff announcements we've seen across various markets in the U.S. But I think that this just speaks to how in demand these workers still are. You know, whether or not they're laid off by one of these big tech firms and going to, you know, one of your smaller mid-sized players, or just going into another industry altogether. You know, I mentioned healthcare, finance. Every type of job has become more reliant on data, more reliant on those hard skills, right, that are very quantitative in nature. And these workers who have found themselves out of a job have been able to get another one, you know, very quickly, and also likely getting pretty good severance packages. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, you can look back for reference. I don't think the COVID pandemic is a good comparison. That was a different beast altogether. But, you know, go back to where we were in 2009, where tech sector was very different back then, right? But I think that, you know, we should expect this to maybe creep a little bit higher as, you know, interest rates remain high and growth remains relatively subdued, at least in the near term. So,
but I think James, so it's interesting because I'm looking, for those of this is just a podcast, you're looking at the graph, and during, you know, during 2009 there was a pretty rapid uptake. You know, this is the 2008 was the recession, right? And so mm-hmm. What is first out of the recession, right? Computer, math, life sciences, and finance. And so in that sense, I think if you're sitting in San Diego, you know, you should be feeling really good about where you're at. If you're a talent and you're thinking, well, there's going to be a mild recession, I think I'd much rather sit that out in San Diego than some of the other regions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think you're spot on there. And then,
plus the weather's nicer.
Yeah, you guys got a lot going for you there. So yeah, you know, a big part of this, right? It's not just that tech firms overhired and now they're having to cut back. I think a big part of this is really that the capital has dried up, at least to some extent, right? So if you just look at the amount of venture capital funding from where we were in 2021, 2022, the amount of capital that was out there, you know, funding a lot of these tech investments was just off the charts, right? It was like nothing we've seen before, because interest rates were low, economy was booming, and it was a great time to invest. Higher interest rates have made that not the case anymore, right? And so we've started to see toward the end of 22 and early this year that venture capital has come back down, but it's really in line with levels still that we saw prior to the pandemic, right? And so I think that characterizing this as a massive crash, you know, where nothing is getting funded anymore, nobody's investing is off base a little bit, right? We've seen this natural reversion back to kind of a more of a normal sort of operating environment that, you know, everyone sort of has this recency bias, right? For many things, not just tech and venture capital, but, you know, looking at last year. And so, yeah, we're down 50% from last year in the amount of VC funding out there, but, you know, it's pretty in line with what we've seen in a typical year. So I think that, you know, we're still going to see hiring. We're still going to see some of these things get funded.
Yeah, and I think too, I mean, specific to San Diego, our numbers say that 2022 was $1.8 billion in venture capital compared to $1.1 billion in 2019. So certainly last year, to James' point, there was a really robust, you know, uptick in tech funding. And I think it is important to know that it's not as if venture capital, private equity doesn't have money, right? They're still sitting on some ungodly number, like, I don't know, it's like $4 billion that are ready to be deployed. What we just have seen is, based on the chart that James has showed you, and that kind of frenzy to fund and grow, just a more thoughtful outlay of that capital. So tech business owners, there's plenty of money out there. That cost of that money is a little bit of a different element. And then venture capital, I think, is just a little bit, you're scrutinizing a little bit more the business, the leadership group, the business plan, the burn rate, the CapEx expend, but certainly prepared to outlay a ton of capital, you know, when appropriate, which I think is a really good indicator of just everybody's calmed down. It's kind of a quiet year, with hopes of, you know, some healthy recovery spending venture capital over the next, you know, 24 months.
Yeah, and I think that's probably too true in the life sciences space too, right, Andy? Where you might 100%. Have seen, you know, these smaller seed funded companies grow very aggressively over the past few years, and now, at least in the U.S. level, we're seeing that, you know, the big players out there are still taking up office space, forming new labs and things like that. Whereas just on the margins, those smaller guys might have a tougher time for the next few months.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah. So I was touching on inflation. I feel like I've been talking about inflation for half the time, but this is really, you know, if you have to point to one thing to watch, is where the inflation data is going. And that's what, if you ever listen to Fed Chair Powell talk or anyone in the Federal Reserve, they're almost exclusively talking about where inflation is, right? And so for those of you that can see this chart, there's a lot going on here, but essentially we've seen headline consumer price inflation. That's the best overall measure of what the price of goods and services are. That peaked at about 9% in mid-2022, and now it's down to just about 5%. So that's the rate of growth in consumer prices year over year. So very positive trend there. That's exactly what you want to see. However, if you dive into the details a little bit, it's a little more concerning, right? And so what we've seen, I mentioned this a second ago, but, you know, gas prices have come down a little bit overall for the most part. And then those supply chain issues have started to improve. So that's what's really led to the headline moderation in terms of price growth. But what's not really improving is the price of services. And so that could include things like housing, which we do expect to soften as the market. I don't know how things are in San Diego, but house prices are still very high in most places around the country, and even rising still. And, you know, if anyone's been traveling recently, hotel rates, airfares, restaurant prices, all of these things that are tied to the labor market, right? And so that's what's represented by this dark black line, for those of you who can see it, where we haven't really seen much improvement in the rates of inflation for those core services. And that's really what the Fed's going to be looking to when assessing whether or not inflation is getting back to a normal, sustainable path. So, you know, by that measure, still got a ways to go. And that's why, you know, our view, talking a little bit about the forecast here, is that, you know, interest rates are probably going to be higher for longer than a lot of people expect. And so I've seen a lot of economists and analysts talk about, all right, when is the Fed going to start cutting rates? When are we going to get some relief on the interest rate front? And it's probably going to be some time. And this is really the measure to watch, those core services inflation, when assessing when interest rates can come back down. So it's probably going to be a while, unfortunately. And then, you know, for our industry and commercial real estate, this is really a big issue, right? Because the cost of fitting out your office space or your retail space or your life sciences lab had just become so prohibitive for a lot of people. I mean, people are still making the investments, and I don't think it's, you know, one of the primary factors that's driving the market right now, but it's just very costly. And what that means is that if you're an operator, an occupier of whatever type of real estate space, you have to be much more confident in that investment you're making, right? And so construction costs on a year-over-year basis have started to not come down. This chart that we're showing on the screen here is looking at the year-over-year change in construction costs. And so the building portion of that has risen, you know, call it about 30% over the last 3 years, about 10% per year. And we're looking at prices that are still increasing, but just not at those rates. And so historically, what we would see in terms of construction costs would be in the low single digits, low to mid single digits, in terms of the cost that you can expect to pay to fit out your space, right? And we've just seen that explode over the past few years. So this is a bit of a good news, bad news story, because we do expect prices to continue to increase, but, you know, just not at those rates that we saw over the past 2 years, as the cost of materials primarily has started to level off for many things like PVC piping, steel, aluminum, HVAC units, you name it. So what's not really where we haven't seen as much improvement is for skilled labor. So we talked a lot about the labor shortages and difficulty getting contractors to complete a project on time and at an affordable cost. And the skilled labor component is still very much an issue at play. One of the cool things, we do a survey for Cushman & Wakefield. We work with a ton of contractors helping clients fit out their space. And so, you know, we do a survey asking them, do they expect construction costs to increase, decrease, and by how much? And so if you look over the past 6 months, all of our GCs and their suppliers were saying costs were increasing significantly. Almost half of them said that. And you can think about that as far as like what we saw in 2021 and 2020. But the number who expect cost to increase by that much going forward has dipped to a minority. And so, yes, we still expect costs to go up, but just not at those crazy rates that we saw over the past few years. So this is a positive indicator for our industry.
Yeah, I think just to bring it back to a local level, I mean, over the last couple of years, if you were a tech or a life science, you're almost forced into longer term leases, right, to offset some of these upfront costs. So for those that are listening and running a business, this next 24 months is really a unique time to start to think about some, you know, leases that might be expiring, rethink kind of your business strategy, because we'll have a little bit more of a balance in favor of the business owner to try to make some more flexible or cost saving decisions. We're starting to see some of the face rents come down in the market, submarket by submarket. You know, downtown is certainly a little bit you know, with a ton of supply. The UTC, Scripps Ranches, Del Mar Heights have maintained relatively the same face rents, although you're seeing kind of the economic packages that a landlord's willing to provide increase dramatically to favor the tenant. So we think that the next 24 months is going to be a really thoughtful and appropriate time for the business owners to renegotiate, rethink, right size, get into maybe some better quality at cheaper priced, you know, types of real estate space.
Yeah, absolutely. We are. We're starting to see that nationally too, Andy, where landlords have been hesitant, right, as far as lowering those asking rates, giving out more tenant allowances to help them fit out their space. But the way the market is heading right now, for the most part, you know, it's definitely starting to shift toward a tenant-friendly environment, which we expect to continue really for the next several years, even beyond this broader challenging economic environment that right, we're experiencing over the next year.
Yeah, but much needed.
Yeah, I know a lot of people looking for space will be happy to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know, we were talking about the Fed a lot, but I think just to put it in a little bit of historical perspective here. So not only have interest rates gone up by about, you know, over 500 basis points or 5 percentage points in the last year plus, but that's the fastest pace that we've seen interest rates increase since the early 1980s, which, you know, if was characterized by very, very high inflation, oil price increases. And so, again, this is a little bit uncharted territory, and this is really why we are forecasting in a modest recession in 2023. I would say that, you know, there's really a balanced environment when looking at, you know, people always like to compare recessions, or they think about recessions as far as comparing it to the great financial crisis, right, in 2007, 2008. And I think this is just a very different time. If you look at things like household debt, particularly in the mortgage market, lending requirements have gotten so much tighter following some regulation that's been put out there. Corporate borrowing hasn't been as reckless as we saw in past cycles. And so both of those things will really help limit the downside here. But just a fun or scary fact, however you want to think about it, each of the past seven times that the Fed has raised rates by this amount, it's been followed by a recession. And so if you just look at that, you look at where rates are today and think, oh boy, we're headed for a downturn here. And so we think that balance will keep it a relatively modest downturn compared to some of the worst recessions we've seen previously. And then, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, economists and everyone love to tell you this is what's going to happen, this is when it's going to happen, give you a bunch of numbers, which, you know, we're doing here. But I think that it's equally important to think about what can shift the outlook, right? Because things are changing so fast right now. We've had, you know, just what, a month ago, we had three big time banking failures, which obviously raises a lot of eyebrows and makes people start to think that hey, this could get pretty bad pretty fast. And I think that, you know, there's some merit to that. We put out an article assessing the banking situation, and we don't think this is, you know, that worst case scenario. But things can happen, right? You know, we can have geopolitical flare-ups. We already have a major war still going on over in Ukraine with Russia. China tensions are very high. We've got a debt ceiling limit that needs to be dealt with in Congress. And so there's a lot of downside risk factors, is the point I'm trying to make here. And so, you know, we really feel like the upside scenario, at least for the near term, are relatively limited. So, you know, if you're a business operator, not kind of planning for some downturn in business, and obviously there's going to be a ton of nuance depending on where you are, what kind of business you're in, but I think that broadly speaking, corporations, businesses are starting to plan for those tougher times ahead. And that's why you're starting to see some layoffs, you're starting to see some cost cutting, and a ton of volatility out there in the capital markets.
You know, this is the slide that really captured my attention. And, you know, it's interesting, James, you're talking about those moderating influences. So even in your severe recession scenario, it you know, you're talking about, you know, a minus, you know, 1% in GDP. So it's interesting that even in your severe outlook, it doesn't look that severe.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit of a numbers game. So we're looking at it on an annual basis, right? And we're coming off of 2022, which was the second part of that was very strong. And so I think that if we were showing you quarter by quarter, there's actually going to be a couple in that scenario that are much more severely down. The one I would actually look at, as opposed to GDP, is look at the job growth. So that's represented, 6.6 million jobs lost. That's a lot. That's, you know, close to what we saw during the 07, 08 recession. And so that's a very stark downturn compared with our baseline scenario, which is job losses around 2.5 million. That's, you know, what we would call a modest or a moderate recession. It's about average what we've seen over the past seven recessions.
And yet the job growth seems to continue to catch the Fed's off balance, right? I mean, it seems like we keep on having these reports on job growth, and they always seem to exceed expectations of some of our leading economists.
Yeah, no, that's very true. The thing I'll say about that, though, is you really have to pay attention to sector by sector, because how this usually plays out in a recession is it turns really quickly. You know, we start to see we've gone from adding about 300,000-400,000 jobs a month to closer to 200,000. I think you're going to see things start to turn pretty quickly here as other sectors start to feel the effects of interest rates going up. One thing that's been very well documented, you know, by economic historians is that the interest rate increases that we've seen, they take a while to filter in and have an impact on hiring and other economic indicators. So, you know, we've been in this cycle now of higher interest rates for over a year. And so just now, I think, are we starting to see that? And so I think you see things turn pretty quickly here in the second part of the year.
And I think just to bring it back to San Diego, I've talked about it, and Andy's talked about it too, is, you know, we've talked about this diversity. We're seeing really strong numbers nationwide on, you know, the job growth that was the slowest, which was leisure and travel. Those numbers seem to be coming up rapidly as you know, and you see it in, you know, everything from cruise prices to hotels to airfare to everything else. And San Diego also has that as a core part of our technology. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in San Diego. I don't think leisure and hospitality is going to be stealing any workers from tech or life science, but it's still a big part of the pie here. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And, you know, life science, I think if you look at those venture capital numbers in San Diego, it seems that the life science companies took a larger chunk of those big increases in venture funding. They took more money, more capital to scale up a life science than it does, let's say, a SaaS company, right? And so it'll be interesting to see how that life science kind of holds up in San Diego as well.
Well, I think the other fundamental, too, that it's important for everybody to know is that, you know, traditionally, San Diego's been a heavy R&D market. And then from a life science standpoint, you'd have big pharma that would come to San Diego, buy the business, buy the science, and then take them back home. In the last 5 years, we've seen big pharma with the likes of J&J, Pfizer, Merck, et cetera, not only make acquisitions in the market, but then say, let's now grow that innovation there. So I think your point, Kevin, is prudent in the sense that San Diego fares a little bit better. And when one's up, the other is kind of compensating. You know, life science has some very large big pharma groups that are here and planning to stay long term. We have that, you know, other pillar of big tech household names that are here. Naturally, there's, you know, the concerns of China prompts some defense related expansion, which San Diego gets the benefit of. And I think the, you know, the fact we've got four major colleges, I mean, UCSD being one of the top engineering schools in the world, you know, that labor is still kind of trickulating into the ecosystem. And because of those fundamentals, I said, with all those big guys now here, we're starting to see more of that labor stay, where pre-COVID 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of that labor came here and then wanted to go to Boston or San Francisco or New York because they had the opportunity to, you know, bounce around to these household jobs. So, I mean, those are a little bit of those lagging indicators that I think certainly make us cautiously optimistic for San Diego to sometimes fare a little bit better than, you know, maybe a macro or global economy.
Yeah, and I think Andy, I think you're right on college. Andy knows this. He's on our board. We have a major effort to retain talent, right? We're in a very envious position here. You know, we San Diego has, you know, major universities, not only UCSD, SDSU, Cal State San Marcos, USD, and one of our, you know, during a really hot jobs, they were more apt to go someplace else, right? And so they, you know, they looked at these other markets. They looked at, you know, where James lives and Austin and New York and other things. And I think with the little cooling off of the job market, again, talk about opportunities, which is one of your guys' taglines, right? Opportunities we see. It's we may have an opportunity to retain more of that talent. So, you know, in a moderate recession, there's opportunities in there as well.
Yeah. Agreed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, the diversity of the economy there is definitely going to help you guys. Anytime you have a university system like that, healthcare system, you're going to be in pretty good shape. You know, not to pick on your neighbors up north in the Silicon Valley, but I know that things are fairly bleak there right now from an office market perspective, as far as tenants vacating space and things. So hopefully you guys fare better than them.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, how are we doing on time? I just want to be mindful to check
in. We're running a little late. Look, we knew this may run long. So if there's, I think we've gotten through a lot of it. There's anything else that James think that he needs to go through? Maybe we go through some things quickly. We are running towards the end, but again, it's really good data and I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah. James, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I think we've covered the majority of it. I mean, I'll kind of give some high level stuff. I mean, you know, when we go into, and maybe James, you got a couple nuggets there to chime in, but when we start to look at, you know, how those fundamentals affect, you know, real estate in San Diego, it really is all across the board, right? Industrial space is seen still sub 2% vacancy based on life science, manufacturing, supply chain groups. San Diego has a ton of active lifestyle brands. You think of the Vuori's or the Nixon watches or bikes or Pat. I mean, so that's been very robust. We're not seeing real softening in industrial flex buildings. Office sector is really the one that's going to struggle. And I think it's kind of the tale of two stories. We've seen a lot of office, tech, professional services groups that have right-sized. So maybe they shrunk their physical square footage as some of the employees are working remotely. But we've seen this flight to quality. So you're seeing a really positive absorption in really nice Class A office space where you've got gym, you've got walkability, you've got good glass line, you've got restaurants close by. And then you're seeing almost a shrinking in, you know, kind of the Class B or C office space where, you know, business owners are just more thoughtful of having something very nice and designed appropriately with hopes that those employees are in the office and collaborating. Retail has been incredibly robust. You've seen a ton of the major malls here that are, you know, multiple offers and groups and food and beverage and soft good groups that are lined up to lease space. And then a little bit of a, you know, the same conversation as office where a tertiary or secondary retail, you know, off, you know, building has certainly struggled. And all those are market by market too, right? Downtown suffering, Del Mar UTC, kind of the Scripps Ranch, Mission Valley doing very well. So there's not really a one size that fits all for our market, but there certainly are newer, more flexible opportunities in San Diego that we haven't been able to see over some time. And James,
but,
I think,
but Andy,
that matches
Andy,
up.
Is the flight to Class A, is it's a pro and a con, right? You might be able to get in Class A where you wouldn't, but again, in San Diego, I don't know if James has thought of seeing this in some other markets. In San Diego, the flight to Class A has it not been driven by life sciences, which has been much better capitalized than some of the tech. And so you're losing some of the Class B and some of the lower cost flex, right? Companies that are doing, like you said, research and development, 100%. Light manufacturing. And so what I'm hearing from a lot of our small mid-sized companies, in fact, they're getting pushed out of UTC and Sorrento Valley and some of these other areas because of the prominence of Class A, which has been dominated by life science. Is that, am I?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. In the last couple of years, you saw life science groups.
Is that a truth that you've seen?
Yeah. So you've seen life science group jump into Class A space, partially because that demand was so robust and they couldn't wait for the development cycle to catch up. Right. And so that did push some of our professional services tech groups out of the market. But we're seeing that soften a little bit. You're seeing some subleases that are hitting the market. You're seeing some landlords that were hopeful to convert that building to life science now sit tight and keep it as office space. And so I think certainly it's balancing a little bit. Now, the flex industrial market, if you have a warehouse kind of space, that's challenging because you have so much money that's gone in. It's a low basis. Landlords can put in a couple $100 a foot and take what should be a $1.50 warehouse space to a $4.50 triple net rent space. And that activity has been there. But we have, you know, a ton of new life science dedicated space that's hitting the market when you look at UTC, Torrey Pines, you know, Kearny Mesa and downtown. So we do think, you know, based on our predictions of these next couple of years, should certainly soften, giving tech professional service related companies not only more choices, better quality choices, and those choices should be at a discount to what we've seen over the previous couple of years.
Well, I like that because every development in the innovation economy, it seems like I've seen the past few years, have been focused on life science. We love our life science companies. Some of them are members of Tech San Diego because of the technology and data science and other efforts. My concern is that, you know, these are all really high buildings, really expensive HVAC. And my concern is that they were taking space away from small, mid-sized tech companies, you know, office space. And I think what I'm hearing from you is, while that, you know, is true in the past, it may be true a little bit, but it won't be as accelerated as it's been in the past, you know,
100%.
36 months.
Yeah, and you're seeing that across, I mean, look at James's slide, right? You're going to see that across the nation. And you'll see a lot of, I mean, you'll see a lot of kind of average B type buildings. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they do in the sense of they're hopeful to get tenant activity. But do they become obsolete in some areas because the demand has just shifted?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah. And one thing I think about, right, is almost hearing you guys talk about these trends of, you know, some of these tech office using firms not being able to find space because there's so much life science activity. What that tells me is that maybe new development, even more new development, is going to be needed for this high quality Class A space, whether or not that's a new development or landlords investing significantly in their building to make it competitive with the best of the best in the market. And so I think that runs a little bit counter to a lot of the common narrative out there that, you know, office is dead because nobody's going back to the office. I think that, you know, office is very much needed. It just needs to be high quality, in the best locations, and that sort of thing. So I think that, you know, there is a positive story here. I think it's hard to see it at the moment with what we've seen as far as a number of office vacancies rising and sublease rising. But I think part of that is attributable to what we were talking about with the economic situation. I think on the other side of that, you're going to see a bit of a resurgence in terms of office using space. But for sure, you know, there are going to be some of those older buildings that need to be repurposed. But the good news is we need more industrial space, more retail space, more housing. And so I think it's something that, you know, when the dust settles, it'll be a positive, but a little bit of a transition period for sure.
Yeah. Agree. So I think, Kevin, I mean, again, just in summation, I mean, lots of moving pieces. There's sub stories to all of these macro trends. San Diego certainly has had a very robust growth in, you know, its ecosystem of, you know, tech related tenants and tons of migration from employees, tons of really good labor that is still here in the market. So, I think we're all very bullish on what we have here in our backyard. Now, of course, that comes with some risks and challenges and competition for labor. But certainly as we think about Tech San Diego, it's certainly going to continue to evolve. And we tend to believe that that evolvement is, you know, for the better with, you know, new tech related jobs and artificial intelligence and machine learning and data collection that are now going to be ever more present as we, you know, as we go forward. So we're certainly appreciative of the time. And like I said, I'll make this deck available to you, Kevin, for the group. And if any business owners wanted to sidebar with James and myself to talk about something specific, we're certainly available and would happy to, you know, have separate conversations with those CEOs, et cetera.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the takeaway value is there's no cliffs to jump over, right? I mean, this is a return. In some ways, one of the takeaways is it's a return to normalcy in terms of growth, right? And we saw this hyper growth, hyper accelerated hiring and everything after the pandemic. And, you know, none of the graphs that you guys showed dipped below, well, post-2019, right? And in 2019, we were having trouble filling the positions, right, that we have. And so I think that's going to continue. I know this is not a commercial, but, you know, I talk to a lot of service providers and I talk to a lot of folks, and a lot of times, you know, everyone only wants to service the large companies, right? And one time Andy and I was having a conversation and I said, that's great, Andy, but what about the smaller company? I mean, they don't have access to all that stuff. And Andy says, well, I don't know what leasing company you've been sending them to, but as far as I could speak for C&W, they actually have the same resources that's available of Google or Apple or anyone else comes to town. And so, you know, I think that, you know, folks who contact Andy here should consider James part of that team. And you know, there's 20 people that aren't selling real estate in Boston that are simply looking to give you a clearer picture of what's on the horizon. And so it's not just about, you know, leasing. And picking a property. It's about how you do that, when you do it, how are you going to do it, and everything else. And so, you know, I think for anybody who's looking at leasing, even if it's 2 years from now, right? Like, I think, Andy, you have those conversations as early as possible.
Yeah,
right?
100%.
It's not a negotiation now. It's just an understanding of what's going on. And that's what James has given us, right? Here's what's going to happen. Talk to Andy. Talk to your landlord. Let's figure out a plan and going forward in 18 months when we have to renegotiate. So on behalf of the small mid-sized companies, Andy, thank you for extending those resources to all of these companies and not just keeping it for these mega technology companies.
We've been a very entrepreneurial market forever, right? And you think of like the Qualcomms and the Viasats, like they started in someone's garage, right? So we don't want to lose that. I think that's really what's unique about, you know, the ecosystem we talked about of labor and funding and, you know, groups like Tech San Diego to support that continued growth, because we never know where the next Google and Apple and, you know, are coming from. And San Diego's got some very large unicorn related tech companies. When you think of like the Seismics of the world, the Two Simples, Kyriba's, like they're here and they're here for a reason, growing here on a global scale. So yeah, we're here, we're a resource, start early, get information, you know, take control back on what affects your business and your labor and your work environment. And we're here with a robust amount of, you know, platform data and information to support those groups.
For those of you who are listeners of the podcast and you're just listening to this, the liner notes should have information on the presentation. We did go through some graphs. This will be online on our YouTube channel as well. If the podcast folks want to go back and look at some of the graphs, and we'll end it there. Again, a really long for a podcast. This is one of our longer podcasts we've had, but a lot of data, and I think it was well worth our time and very productive. So James and Andy and Cushman and Wakefield, thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
Thanks. Have a good day.
All right.